This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's now time for Sensing Bros, a program with a focus on youth well-being.
This program is about natural buzz. There's a group of us brothers who are living alcohol and drug free, and we want to share our stories and celebrate the things that are going right in the world. There's a lot of negativity. We're about positivity. We come from diverse cultural backgrounds, Samoan, Tongan, Maori, and we just want to share the love.
Not great at this, but I'll give it a good crack. I'm good at spinning a yarn in person. I've never had someone go click and hit record though. So we'll see how we go.
We will see how we go. I just recorded 36 seconds.
Oh, cool.
So, hey man, it's good to be up here. And what I'll do is, rather than me introduce you, I'll just ask you how you would like to introduce yourself. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Yep.
Oh. In the Sensing Bros space.
Oh.
Yeah.
Talofalava, another bro checking in with Sensing Bros. My name is Gerhard Birking, a New Zealand born Samoan, currently residing in Auckland, and here to talk a little bit about gaming and gambling, among other things, with the bro Phil.
Awesome, man. Awesome. You want to say a little bit about what you do?
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah. And who are you?
So I'm a public health worker, health promoter, employed with a Pacific organization, same as Phil, Mapumaya.
Mapumaya.
Mapumaya. Yes. And we serve our Pacific community by supporting families who experience gambling harm. Of course, there aren't many people who only have gambling as an issue. It's not a standalone issue, so there's a lot of things we have to take into account when working with families. So thankfully we've got a team with, you know, a wide range of skills to cater to that. A lot of people with addictions background like yourself, Phil, and
thanks for putting that out there, eh?
Oh, no.
No. I'll tell my story.
And yeah, myself, my background is in health sciences. Population health is where I studied that at the University of Auckland. Following that, I was fortunate enough to land in the addictions field with the Problem Gambling Foundation, which just so happens to have introduced me to Mapumaya, our Pacific Harm. So this is my fourth year now.
Wow.
Fourth year with Mapumaya. Wow. Oh, with the Problem Gambling Foundation and Mapumaya. Mm. And there's a lot of things we've accomplished in that time. Mm. So yeah.
What's the best thing about this role?
Oh, I think just making a difference out there with our Pacific community and New Zealand in general. Just creating positive change, getting out there and listening to the people, as opposed to speaking at them.
So can I ask, because I can.
Yeah.
No, I ran, because your generation, you're being probably exposed to a lot of stuff that we were growing up, you know, and your generation, in terms of the gambling and the online and social media space, you're digital natives, whereas I'm a foreigner to the digital native land. trying to find my way through the jungle.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really interested in your thoughts around what you see happening and what the risks are. Because like you, I find there's a lot of people who really have ideas, maybe some of them are myths, around what problem gambling actually is.
Right.
Yeah, so just in terms of that online thing, some of the work that you've done, and I know you've done a pretty neat piece of exploratory survey research type stuff, eh?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, so I feel like this the current generation, or the millennials as they call them, you know, digital interaction is very normalized amongst this group, to the point where they're not really they're so submerged in it they don't know anything else. They they probably don't see it the way we see it, how you can step out and go, oh, what's going on here? And I think they, the new generation, you know, they are kind of at risk.
Because it's like what I'm, it's like the saturation thing, eh? Like, this is how I see it. Because I don't saturate myself in Facebook and all of, and Twitter and the other platforms. I mean, and yet there's a saturation of it. It's like an extended hand or a part of a person's limb.
Yep.
For the millennials.
For the millennials.
And so you're getting, like you're getting all those pop-ups which are just, you know, normalising the idea of take a risk, eh?
And also, you know, with the normalisation of digital interaction, you know, they might not see, they might not pick up when somebody's taking advantage of them, especially the youngsters.
Yeah. Like a grooming, eh?
Yeah, like so...
Enticement.
That's right.
Yeah. So, have you... Like, do you game? Have you...
I grew up gaming. Yeah. I was a...
Do I need to do a brief intervention, bro?
No, sorry. We'll find out, I guess. Well,
we will find out. Yeah, you grew... Yeah, so that really interests me, eh? That was a part of your...
That's right, I think my generation, I was born at the end of the 80s, 89, and so I grew up in the 90s when Sega and PlayStation was hot. I feel like, although, you know, we had countless nights of staying up until morning playing, it felt a bit more innocent and a bit more fun. It's a one-off purchase, firstly. Yes, you buy your game, and then you set out to go clock it, finish the game, and do what you want after that, I guess.
Yeah.
The difference now is that people, there's this continuous payment element to the game where you only reach a certain point before being asked to pay again.
Yes.
Yeah, so this pay-to-play element is... Yep. Is I'm a bit worried about it for the new generation, especially youngsters who don't have any earning capacity,
and that drive to actually achieve and master is quite attractive, eh? Like to buy your next level, to buy your way through to the next level, to get to the top. Wiedemann was talking about that, eh?
Yeah,
you've seen that in the basketball game. There's a thing where you to actually get there. You have to pay.
You have to pay money again.
Yeah, to play with the best. Well, you know, you could say that life costs, entertainment costs.
Yeah, you could.
I wouldn't pay it myself.
Right.
Yeah, but at what point? See, that's the thing. At what point would you say people should be sort of just maybe step back and just check whether it's gone from fun to something other than just playing a game? Yeah. For you, did you notice people getting stuck in kind of like that place?
So when I did my survey, little study on Pacific youth, and I interviewed about 64 people between the ages of 13 and 24, there weren't many that actually went through and paid continuously to keep playing.
Yep.
There were only a handful, but the majority of them regretted it, indicated that it affected them in a bad way, either it just affected their mood or they felt bad about spending money they felt they didn't have to spend.
Yeah.
So they,
this well, that's interesting, eh?
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things you'd be thinking about a lot, about, okay, what is the actual impact after the fact? And are people reflecting on that? And, you know, when you go into a game, you don't, eh? You just go in and it's not till after and you're looking back.
Right.
That place to reflect.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So your survey's asking that kind of thing.
Yes, it was asking them, you know, whether it was kind of trying to gauge how exposed they are to those little prompts.
Yeah.
And advertisement pop-ups.
Yeah.
Almost all of them said they receive them. Yeah. Constantly. And so that was one thing I was able to confirm, is that they are exposed.
Yeah. Exposure, man.
And second is when they're drawn in, they just want to keep going.
Yeah.
I feel like perhaps the main reason why a lot of them didn't go ahead and continually pay is because the money just wasn't there.
Yeah.
But if they had their way, they probably would have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The link A is, I mean, I'm not making a causal link, but the almost like there's a readiness. If I was designing a product for that medium, for that tool, to attract people, which has already been done, now is a great time to be trying to be in the gambling industry making money online. I'm opposed to things that create harm, but there is a whole industry that is targeting so how much of this do you think, because there's not a lot of research, is that correct?
No,
how much of this is just alarmist public health, us being do you think there's really enough concern for us to kind of get into that space and start raising awareness and saying stuff about it?
I think publicly the concern isn't there. I feel like people want to see a few people go over the cliff first before identifying that there's a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just feel like we...
Yeah, yeah.
We need to kind of go with the current here and not fight it. We do know that technology is advancing.
Yeah.
And like we were saying before, I feel like the standard of regulation is in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Is falling behind, if that makes sense.
Yeah, how do you, you know, really control that external virtual space?
Yep. And it's a worry. So I feel like, you know, we have the right
to control.
We should be concerned for the well-being of our people. I don't mean to sound like the fun police or anything.
Yeah.
Because I love gaming too, you know.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't want it to get out of hand.
Yeah,
What I mean.
I do. That's what I'm trying to work out.
Yeah.
Myself around, because coming from the AOD field, you know, there's this thing around
we're working with drugs and blah 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 blah, and there's it's not really about dealing with entertainment, fun, and the line that it crosses when it becomes pathological gambling. I'm trying to understand the commonalities between addiction and how we do it when it's a substance to addiction when it's a machine.
Right.
Yeah. So it's an interesting world I've been boarded into, Lord.
It is.
You know, hey, here's the other thing about our workforce. Like, it's not very big, eh? Like, there's not that many of us working in this space. So
you'd be one of the few public health professionals that I've come across of your generation working in problem gambling.
Yep.
Yeah. How do you find that?
Oh, I find it challenging. I definitely, you know, feel... I look around and there's people like yourself who have got miles of experience over me. And well, what I just try and bring is some fresh perspective and you know, use what networks I have to link in with and go searching for answers, like with this online gaming thing. You know, thankfully Mapumaya have utilized my strengths and
being young,
I guess.
Yeah, being the young one.
Even though they don't think I'm that cool, but you know,
excuse me.
I feel like I can meet them halfway. Yep. Like, you know, I can communicate at a certain level with these kids.
Yeah.
Or these young people and and then come back and feedback to the team on what I've found. And articulate it back in the way that
we can hear it.
That's right.
Yeah. That you can feel valued about that.
Because
it's a serious question for me. Because, like, I mean, I'm probably one of the older ones.
Mm.
And we're looking for, in the area of youth well-being, people like yourself as leaders in that conversation. And I mean, I've done a lot of the youth work stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And you get to a kind of a place in life where you go, yeah, maybe I'm not the guy anymore. and you know you're not the guy when you know you're not the guy. So that's why I'm, you know, not just young blood because it's young blood, but young, you know, young men like yourself who care about what's happening.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool, bro. It's very cool. Here's a good one. Growing up, did you know about public health?
No.
Mm.
I didn't know. My eyes were closed.
Yeah.
It wasn't really until university and I took a few population health papers and it kind of just, it showed me the theory side mainly, but of how to create macro change, population change.
Yes.
And also the obstacles you'll likely face. It was still nothing compared to what I'd end up learning on the job. I think that was the greatest thing to happen for me, was to just get out there in the field and start learning the realities of, you know, of our field.
Yeah, this is how health. You apply the theory.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I walked in here all passion. Just, I'm going to do this and do this. Hold on.
System.
Yep.
Yeah.
And people were saying, you know, we've tried that a few years back. Here's what happened. This is why it worked. This is why this other part didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, I quickly learned that you just the picture's more complex.
That's
than it seems.
Yeah. A plan's a good thing, but a plan has to have an appreciation of complexity.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, in the gambling sector, I'm not sure about the others.
Yeah.
So alcohol, drugs.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone's somewhat on the same page. You know, they don't want alcohol harm, tobacco harm, methamphetamine. They don't want that floating around their neighborhoods, definitely.
Yeah.
And but with gambling, it feels like, you know, there's a few more people than I originally thought who are all for it.
Yeah.
But for different reasons.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we're up against the industry. And
yes.
There are other.
There's That really interests me. Like, there's the private sector business interests.
Yeah.
The pub charities and the who may or may not have the kind of social conscience that we feel that we've got in our public health space, eh?
Yeah.
I say may or may not because it's a bit like what I see can happen is people get compartmentalised in whatever their business is and or whatever their industry is or whatever their the thing that they're pursuing is. And I think we all try to take the moral ground around stuff. And some of us do it, I think, with a bit more honesty.
Right.
Which is why you got to use your research honestly. You know that story,
yeah? Yeah, yeah.
And then others just have a very narrow, self-interested approach to their business, which is a personal choice that people make in life, you know?
Yeah.
So we say, hey, like, the one of the things is we're not anti-gambling, we're not anti-entertainment, we're not anti-fun, but we're really pro-social responsibility.
Yes.
And that just doesn't apply to business, it applies to education and health and all of the other things. So our big platform is our values that sit underneath that.
Mm.
Yeah. And then we get told that we're puritanical or we're missing, we're just not seeing the, we're anti-business and we're
anti-business,
anti-industry.
Yes.
You know,
we're anti-competition or...
Yeah. Yeah. Like somehow we're hippies on the left, so far on the left that, you know, we're kind of like... I'd just like to say to all of those listening out there...
Right.
...that... we're not buzz killers. We just actually believe that life can be lived more fully by not putting money into pokey machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, some communities benefit put the communal funding to good use,
yeah,
there is a social cost that comes along with it. And we have everyday people come through our doors.
Yeah.
We go out there and visit families in our community who are really doing it tough, you know, because of gambling. And it's not just the gambler who's affected too. Children, probably the most at risk of being harmed because they have no say in their household income. So all they know is what their parents provide them with.
Yeah. Oh man, I was talking to a young fella yesterday, and he was saying he wants to stop the $30 that he gets out of his benefit from going into the machine. He actually wants to stop it. And it used to be a lot worse.
Yeah.
So he used to be putting in, you know, and he didn't have a lot of money, but he used to be putting in $100 at a go, which was, of course, his rent.
Right.
And stuff. So what he's learned to do recently is just make sure he's got his rent and his power covered and his food.
Mm.
And I says, do you really want to drop that 30? He says, yeah, I want to stop it. I says, why? You know. And he said, well, because his family, he's got family around him and they ask him to do things with him, you know, every now and then and stuff like that. And they say, look, man, we've got you covered. And he feels stink because he spent the money that he could have used on doing that thing, whether it was going to the movies or going out to dinner with him. It's not a lot of money, but it's just that he's working through. He feels stink that he's wasting money on a thing where he knows it's actually, he doesn't want to put it, the other family, extended family, and paying for him. So he's just working through that. He doesn't like it. He does not like the fact that he feels that he's gonna use it that way. Yeah.
So you were mentioning, uses offers benefit money.
Yeah.
Right. So, that what that's kind of says to me is, you know, is he trying to make better? Trying to improve his situation.
Yeah, he is.
And that's the dangerous thing about gambling is that it fills people up with hope.
Yeah.
As we all know. And,
yeah.
And then you
hope.
You just want to, you know, put that $30 in and hope for the best that if I can get just a little bit more, then I'd pay off this and pay off that. A lot of people gamble with good intentions.
Yeah.
With what they do with their winnings, it's not a, they're not thinking selfishly.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's still
playing the odds. Eh?
So you're still playing the odds and putting yourself at risk of harm.
Yeah. Can I ask a sociological question? In your opinion, were you going further with that? Okay, here's the question. So we know that the density of the gambling outlets are in poorer socioeconomic areas.
Yes.
What's the theory around that? What's the idea? Why are they there? Because you, yeah.
I'll put it simple. Plain and simple. That's where they'll make the money. They'll put the machines where they feel they'll make money.
Yeah.
And what we know is high deprivation areas and poorer people.
Yeah.
They buy into the hope aspect.
Yeah.
A lot more than the more affluent.
Yeah.
In New Zealand, so
yeah.
You know, the density rate is in the poorest neighbourhoods in New Zealand. You'll find one pokie machine per 75 people.
Wow!
And in the richest areas, you'll find it to be one pokie machine per 265 people.
Hmm.
So quite a big difference there.
Yeah,
if you think about it. And, and when you also measure up the expenditure, the amount of money that people are losing to pokie machines, the poorer areas are putting out a whole lot more money. And just remember that the poor neighbors, they've got less to spend. This is money that they really probably can't afford to give up and lose.
Yeah.
Yet, here they are leading the way with with gambling money.
That's housing, it affects food.
Yeah.
All the basic stuff, eh? Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, just a different tact. Music. Because we do a kitchen session thing. We just kick this off on Sensing Bros.
Yep.
Around, so it's just music in the kitchen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, this one goes out to Bruce and Tiv. But anyway, what's your sound, man? What's your music thing?
I'm gonna be honest. Growing up, instantly connected with the culture of hip hop, so I am a conscious hip hop head.
Whoa.
And not an MC or anything myself, but but just an active member in the hip hop community. So member / consumer, I guess.
Well,
it's interesting. I just people.
It's interesting.
So I know yourself, you're into jazz.
I like jazz, bro. Yeah, I do.
You like jazz.
Yeah.
So,
I'm a sort of soul Motown.
Soul Motown.
Some rock and roll, some country.
Yep.
Some good country out there. Like a wide genre, but for relaxing music, definitely some jazz.
Right.
Yeah. So, did you do anything musical? You want to rap something? Bruce did.
Really?
You're putting out the rap challenge, yeah.
Oh, I've got nothing on the top of my head, man.
Lucky.
And I'm if I'm trying to freestyle, you know.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I can't. but
hey, who would you recommend? I'll play it. We'll put them on the playlist. Anybody?
Oh, well, keeping it, I guess, in New Zealand. Well, how about some Shefu?
Yeah.
Waka?
Yeah.
Okay. That'd be...
Yep, easy. Easy peasy. Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
you can't really go wrong with Shefu.
Nah, I know, I know. There's a whole group, eh, of New Zealand musos, man, that are just, what we want to do is just, well, I've been playing a little bit of overseas music, but it's because it's classic stuff. But I really want to focus on our New Zealand music scene.
Yeah.
Bring that out. So, okay, sweet. Hey, bro, so if you were to give advice to a student or a young person about public health and about the possibilities... how would you paint that picture that might encourage them to come into the field? our line of work?
I know you would,
man. But what we're really after is.
Sorry, Phil.
No, it's a good. It's like okay. So, what comes to mind? comes to mind when you think of perhaps a whole generation of young people who you would like to encourage to consider public health as a you know, just an opportunity to. Sorry, man. My question's all gone now.
No, I'm sorry. I think I
you know what
I'm
saying.
I threw you off.
Was it just by chance that you did those papers, or what did somebody say? Hey, come and do those papers, man. This will help in your general study, or.
No, I was just reading up on it. I was your typical teenager who wasn't really sure what to commit to. Yeah. There's a lot of things I knew I think I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But when there's time to decide on one, you really get stuck in. You know, I just like a lot of other young brown males out there, we struggle to commit to one thing. So I had a big decision to make in the summer of 2008.
Yeah.
And I was reading through the different faculties, reading up on them at University of Auckland, and in one in particular rang out to me. It was the Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences.
Yeah.
And immediately I ruled out medicine because I actually pass out at the sight of blood. And but health sciences, I thought, you know, what is this about? And then I was starting to pick up, you know, that
that's cool.
It's a lot of preventative work.
Yep.
You work towards social justice, equity, and you know, preventative, preventative stuff. And I thought, geez, that sounds a bit like me. You know, I do have a passion for helping people.
So you're underneath that motive, eh? Your motive was, what? How can I take an area that I'm interested in and just do what you do?
I learned a lot along the way. I had mentors. So that's one thing I'd say to students or people wanting to go down this path is to definitely network, meet people. It's amazing what you learn from people who have already been there. And
and be confident in that, eh?
Like,
you know how a lot of people are kind of shy and reserved and stuff, and every now and then, but I've got this thing, it's called Life on the Front Foot. I'm really wanting to encourage people, because I was very reserved, very quiet. The way I was brought up was not to ask questions at all. It was sort of like old school, you know? From my father, you just didn't really. You learned by observing. You learn by asking and having big conversations. But really just encouraging young people to respectfully ask. You know? And be confident.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took a second for me to get accustomed to that, to having my voice heard.
Yeah.
Even in just the classroom.
Yeah.
You know.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of lecturer would ask me just what I thought about it.
Yeah.
And, sitting there like, I don't have the right answer.
Yeah.
Not knowing, like, you know.
Yeah.
Not.
I do. I really
not thinking. Know. Not yeah. realizing that, you know, there is no right or wrong answer with a lot of these questions. It's, they want to know what you think.
Yeah.
And they want to just have a discussion with you
yeah.
about certain topics or issues.
Yeah.
So yeah, but once I did, I got comfortable enough, and then I can't remember now, but some people would say, hey, that's a really good point.
Yeah, the ability to be able, to because in our role, we have to stand up in front of people and do presentations and do heaps of that sort of stuff. And for me, it was a very much a learned thing. Like, I had to push through all the nerves that I got and get over the things, the humiliating things I did in those spaces, which were really awkward, really bad communication things that I thought had to learn. Mm. And then I got alongside people, like you were saying, who did it really well. And then became a lead facilitator,
right,
rather than a co-facilitator, and then ended up in with groups and things that were outside of my comfort zone. But I had enough of the tools to actually do those things. And so you know, I'm probably twice your age, maybe. I don't know.
I'm 28.
I'm not going to say. but that whole thing around, learning and taking on board other people's kind of criticisms.
Mm.
It's really valuable, eh?
Oh, definitely.
And learning to listen, man, that's been the big thing.
Yes. Yeah, that's probably, that's one part that I missed is, if I'm talking to a youngster who's wanting to know what public health is about, a lot of it is listening.
Yeah.
It's not the person up top telling everyone below how to do things I learned the value of a bottom-up approach when studying, and having, and not working for the community, but working with them.
Yeah.
And that's something you need to be able to do.
Yeah.
If you're wanting to be in public health, is equipping.
It's cool.
It's just equipping people with the tools they need to help themselves.
Yeah.
You're very much a behind the scenes person, and I'm happy with that because I'm not like a person who wants to be
in the spotlight.
In the spotlight, not at all.
Yeah.
I rather enjoy working behind the scenes and seeing people create outcomes for themselves.
Yeah. I just had a picture of a spotlight, sort of looking for you. where other people chase that spotlight, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's I like that, man. That's quite humble. It's a humble space to come from.
Another thing they do, what I encourage, is to develop their ability to think critically about power.
Yeah.
About power in society.
Ooh, nice.
How it's distributed.
Yeah.
And understand why,
that's a really biggie. Philosophically, that's a hugie, man. You've got to have a theory of power, eh?
Mm.
I think, to understand suffering.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, that's really good. Getting in there to learn how you can do the 1%ers that will move towards creating a big change.
Yeah.
So little things, policy,
healthier
policies, research, providing.
Being a contributor, to well-being, and not sitting on the sideline and watching it and moaning, but actually applying knowledge to alleviate suffering.
Yeah.
That's my big thing.
Yes.
And there's a lot of things that I see that are unnecessary suffering. You know, it doesn't have to be. You know. So being a part of the
a whole lot of people in different spheres with different hats, you know, who are about that is really cool, eh? Yeah.
Yep.
Sure you don't want to rap, bro?
Hey, man, this power thing, I want to continue with that conversation all the way.
Like, I want to thread that through what we, with everybody that we talk to, because I think that's, there's something really significant in that, man. The power. Yeah, and the abuse of power.
That's right.
So that's a huge thank you to Gerhard. You're a great blessing, man. And a big thank you to, of course, Mapu Maya, our new sponsor. If you want to get in touch with Mapu Maya to discuss anything around anything that we've talked about on the show, particularly around gambling, we provide counselling and health promotion, public health services. More than happy to talk. So our email, or Mapu Maya's email, is at help@mapumaya. I'll spell that, MAPUMAIA.NZ. And website is www.mapumaya.nz with the free phone 0800 212 122. So we're going to go out with an artist I've just been introduced to recently. Shout out to Miriama. Yiba, I think, is how you pronounce it, but what a groove. Y-E-B-B-A, and the song is Evergreen. All right, God bless.
I kissed my penny and I threw it. I prayed I'd keep my soul. Went down to the river where the water bends. The only place I know. Oh. Mississippi's overflowing.